Welcome back to the Impact Lounge. You are in the number one place to be for the Impact Wrestling fan. This is the Cool Factor Podcast. I'm your host, TW. And of course, with me is the main man, BQ. BQ, say what's up to the people.
Yeah, what's up, everybody? Thanks for tuning in this week. I know last week I did this review show solo and it came out late and no one listened to it because it came out so late. You know, I promise we're working on something. We're gonna get this handled, but to let you know about this actual episode, we're gonna do things a little bit different today. We're gonna switch it up. We're not gonna review Impact. I'm gonna keep it 100 with you guys. We thought this episode, and so let me not jump right into the negativity. The last several episodes, you guys heard me come on here and say, good episode, easy to consume. Main event was here before I knew it. This episode, in our opinion, was the shits. I thought this was the worst episode they had done since some of the empty arena stuff, which there was a lot of empty arena shows that I did not like, even a little bit. This was the worst episode I can freaking remember. And I've talked to a few people that kind of liked it. The main event was cool. There was nothing else good on that show. Nothing. We could get on here and review the show and complain about every single segment, every single match, and we wouldn't be wrong, because the reasons I didn't like the episode, I can list them like very clearly, and you'd be like, oh, okay, I see that. But people don't want to hear us get on here and just trash an entire episode, so we're just not even going to talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, listen, there was some stuff on here that was cool. Like your man's Steve Macklin, he went out there, had a nice one with PCO.
They had three botches in the first minute of the match.
Yeah.
Three in a row.
But we're not going to talk about that.
You're right. So I just said I got reasons for everything. I'm just pointing that out.
But so like, so this was definitely like not, I mean, you know, look. The episode's out there. Y'all could see it. Y'all could not see it, whatever. But we had an idea to do something what we think is actually much more fun. Since this Slammiversary coming up this week, and the whole theme is celebrating Impact 20 being the 20-year anniversary of Impact Wrestling, BQ and myself decided that we were going to give you our history of Impact Wrestling. Basically, we were going to go through some of our favorite things, our favorite memories of being fans of Impact Wrestling. So we have a list of stuff we're going to talk about, you know, some of our favorites. And what you guys can do in the chat is if you want to drop in your own favorites, for example, I'm going to ask BQ, you know, when did you start watching Impact or TNA? And he's going to tell me when he started watching. And I'm going to tell you when I started watching. And then you can in the chat, go ahead and start, you know, just you can take down all the questions and then you can fill in your responses. Let us know, you know, where y'all line up with us. You know what I mean? The funny thing about it, what we discovered while we were kind of pre-prodding this is that, as many of you know, you can break the history of Impact Wrestling into two eras. There's the 02 to 2013 era. In 2013, you know, Bound for Glory 2013 was the apex of TNA. Like, I don't even think that's questionable. And then post that, right? Like, I mean, like, you know, in particular, you know, you can really delineate. I believe it was the day in July when Spike TV tweeted they were canceling Impact Wrestling. And that's the post, you know, the post Spike TV era. And it's just been a completely different product in so many ways. But it's still here. It's still going strong and it still has fans. And there's plenty of fans. BQ is a fan who didn't come on until after what I would consider the peak of TNA. And so, so we got variety here of different angles from different years, you know, different big moments, you know what I mean? A lot of the stuff that he might think might think of as some of the big moments. I might think of some stuff that's earlier, or he might think of some stuff that's later. And so I think you guys will see there's a nice contrast in our points of view here. So before we get started real quick, go ahead and hit that like button. Make sure you like this video. Make sure you hit that subscribe button so you subscribe to this channel and hit the notification bell so you get notified each and every time we drop some brand new fire content on this page. BQ, you ready? Ready to dive into this?
Gia.
All right, so here we go. So BQ, let's start off with, you know, Impact Wrestling, I believe, first came on the air in 2002. But when did you actually start watching Impact or TNA?
So this might be a surprise to some who maybe just started listening in the last year or two. You know, you see, I've got the lounge, you know, it's the number one place to be. And then, you know, some of you who have been with me since day one already kind of know this. I came on very late in the game. I started consistently watching TNA when they moved to Pop TV. And it wasn't that I wasn't a viewer before, but it was very, like, I would catch an episode when they're on Spike TV here and there. I would read some results on the internet. I used to read, I can't remember, his name was something Gray, but he had a website where he would just do Q&A mailbags and, you know, lots of WWE questions on there, but lots of TNA ones too. So following, you know, all his columns were, there was TNA stuff. I was able to get into some of the backstage stuff behind the scenes. When they moved to Destination America, I didn't have the channel. So, you know, so previous to that, I watch it. If I caught an episode, if I didn't, it wasn't really that big of a deal. I wasn't clueless to what was going on, but I wasn't really that interested because at the time I was actually a big WWE fan and I was very conditioned to what WWE did as a product. And when I would watch TNA, sometimes I'm like, I mean, I know they've been given a hard time for trying to be WWE light, but for me at the time, I would turn it on and I'm just like, this kind of looks like a knockoff wrestling show. I wasn't giving it a fair shake in all honesty, you know, because it's just like watching Impact now. You can't just turn on one episode every once in a while and be like, okay, I like this product. Like you actually usually got to commit to it a little bit, you know? And I didn't give it that full commitment when it was on Spike TV. And again, with Destination America, that's when I started taking a little more interest in it, but it just wasn't accessible for me. And at the time, I was so heavy into music and stuff and dating, to be honest, that I didn't make that extra time to really care. I didn't get on the internet and look at the streaming sites and see what they were doing on Destination America. I didn't have the time. Didn't really feel it that important, though, to watch it. Mm-hmm. But later, you know, as they moved on to Pop TV, I had already decided I really, really wanted to follow it. And then when they got to Pop, it became a lot easier and went from there. So My knowledge, the TNA stuff is not great. And I'm sure you can tell, I've been doing this podcast long enough. You can tell that a lot of my old knowledge isn't there. But it's only because I kind of watch it. It's kind of like NWA now, where I watch it like once every 2 months, once every 3 months. Yeah. I'll order the pay-per-view. That's about it. I don't really know what they're doing episode to episode, but I'm not lost at the same time.
Yeah. No, listen, I think that's actually great, honestly. I think that, like, you know, for just on the internet, right? Like, there's a lot of diversity of thought and opinion out there. People just don't know how to, like, interact with each other. You know what I mean? Like, people are like, oh, you don't know anything, blah, 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 blah. But, like, no, man, like, it's good. I say this all the time, right? Like, there's a 15-year-old wrestling fan out there, right, who has no idea that, you know, TNA was the laughingstock of the wrestling world and was Dave Meltzer's, you know, punching bag. And, like, you know what I mean? And Impact needs to be focused on trying to get that fan. You know what I mean? Cause I'm here. You know what I mean? Like, I'm here. Don't worry about me. I don't need you to keep showing me the AJ Styles wrestle here and that the crowds were way better and the production was way better. Like, I don't, this is not helping your case. You know what I mean? But there is like, but there's plenty of history there. So me, I started watching probably, gosh, I want to say like 07, 08, 09 for sure. Definitely. I was definitely watching in 09 for sure, but it was probably 08, 09 was when I started watching. I just, you know, it was early after college for me. I had went down to North Carolina, played football for a year, and then I came, then I was back in Connecticut chilling, and I just found it one day. I just found it on TV, on Spike TV, and I think it really caught my eye. The one thing I really loved about TNA Impact when I first saw it was the great production value. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was well lit. There was a lot of fans. It was loud. Like, it's so funny because, like, I get annoyed when people are like, oh, I can't give Impact a chance. It just doesn't look blah, blah, blah. And it's funny because that's the exact same reason why I never got into Ring of Honor. And it's the exact same reason why I did get into Impact early, because I was like, this looks like a respectable wrestling show.
Right.
Like, if I was a fan getting into wrestling today, like, there's probably no way I would be watching Impact, because I would just like pick it up and be like, oh, well, this isn't on par with, this is not even close to, can't compete with WWE. Why do I want to see this?
And I've said the same thing, is that, yeah, they don't have the money that AEW has, but there's only four wrestling shows on TV. Well, five: SmackDown and Raw, NXT. You know what? I'm not going to say episode, because some have multiple shows like Rampage, all that shit.
Right.
WWE's on TV. I'll throw NXT as a separate brand on there. AEW's on TV, and then there's Impact. Yeah, I don't know if MLW still has their little weird TV thing or whatever they have, but the three of those companies compared to the one, compared to Impact, it's just night and day. And
yep,
granted, they don't have that kind of money, but that's a problem, because you're going to be compared to the other wrestling that's on TV. Right. Whether the people watching don't know you don't have the money. It's like, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's stay back in our way back machine here. So what was the first thing that made you actually, once you discovered Impact Wrestling, right, what made you stick around as a fan? What was the hook for you?
All right. So the hook for me, when I said earlier that I decided I really, really wanted to follow, was, you know, again, Destination America stuff, I couldn't really follow it the way I wanted to. So I missed a lot of the really good EC3 stuff, but through whatever methods on the internet, I caught enough of it where I was really interested in him.
Okay.
I heard him do some podcast interviews, but the one he did an interview with Jim Ross. And after that interview, I was just like, I got to start watching TNA.
Okay.
And so I had ordered a couple of the pay-per-views while they were on Destination America, not prior to me watching full time on Pop. And like the EC3 stuff, to me, I was just like, this dude is money. Like, if he's the only wrestler in this promotion and I don't like a single other wrestler on there, I will tune in for this guy.
Wow.
I was just locked in. Yeah. I found one of my old EC3 shirts today in the garage. I had lost it for years. I could not find this damn shirt. And, I'm cleaning out the garage because, you know, we're moving to Vegas next year. And I was just like, we can't wait till next year to clean.
Right.
So a year in advance, we started cleaning and I found the damn shirt. I'm like, hell, I couldn't believe I found it. I thought that thing was like gone forever. But EC3 100% hooked me in. I was like, I have to watch going forward because of this guy.
I totally get that, man. And I think like it's funny because like, EC3 was definitely one of the guys who felt like he should have been like the flag bearer for the company. You know what I mean? Like, it's, you know, a lot of people in the wrestling world will be like, excuse me, a lot of wrestling fans will hate on, you know, different companies for using ex WWE guys. But to me, that's just such a stupid thing. Like, So what are you faulting guys for going to take a chance to work at WWE? You know, I mean, like, it's the biggest you know, opportunity anybody's ever going to get in wrestling. It's the most money you'll ever make anywhere in wrestling. So, like, why wouldn't you take a chance to go work for WWE? And does that mean no company should ever touch you because you worked at WWE at one point? Like, that's just stupid. But in the case of EC3, I had never seen EC3 on their NXT or developmental at that time. So he was a fresh face to me when he popped up on Impact. And it became clear early on that they were very invested in this guy. And it became clear that he was very invested in them. I noticed he was doing like all the little shows, like the Spin Cycle, and they had the Impact Wrestling podcast at the time. He was doing that. And like, he was just doing everything he could to try to be the face of the company. This was around the same time when The Miz was coming up in WWE. And so people got to see that, right? Like, I was having this conversation with people last night. Like, you know, people in the wrestling business, they see how a Roman Reigns gets treated. And they're like, okay, boom, you know, F all that, whatever dream and fantasy I had. As a human professional in my job, I want to be treated like that. So what does he do? I need to do that. You know what I mean? So same thing. Like, when you see the Miz, you know, ascend the ladder by doing all the extra stuff, okay, if you're EC3, you're at a new company, I'm going to do what The Miz did. Let me go do everything extra and just try to be the face of the company. And I think we could all see that from EC3 very early on. And yeah, man, like, he's a guy who I definitely thought was going to, I thought he had an opportunity to, and to his credit, to the company's credit, they gave him every opportunity to be, you know, be all he could be as a face of Impact Wrestling. So it is what it is. I definitely wouldn't put that in like any sort of, you know, sour grapes category.
And I still think that the reason he didn't become the John Cena of the company, which, I mean, that's big praise right there, but just for lack of better terms, he didn't become that John Cena. I've said this a lot of times. I narrow it down to Bound for Glory 2015 when it was him and Lashley in the main event. And a good wrestling company with good booking and good creative, they know when it's time to put a belt back on somebody. They know, WWE knows when Brock Lesnar needs to hold a belt. Granted, it seems like it's all the time, but you know, when he loses a title, they know, okay, he can go without the title for so long and then he needs it back. He needs something back. You can look at you know, Britt Baker in AEW. Like, she dropped her belt, but they're kind of like, yo, Britt with the belt is money, so she wins this Owen Hart tournament, gets this belt for that. Mm-hmm. You know, so, and there's a lot of other examples and instances. Those are the first couple to come to mind. And Bound for Glory rolls around. You know, he turned babyface at the top of the year. He needed to win that match. Like, he went long enough without the belt. He needed to win that match. But they wanted to keep, well, no, I don't want to say they kept Lashley's dominance going, because then he lost to Eddie Edwards the next night. But that was the turning point for EC3, that he had all this buildup to Bound for Glory. He even got, you know, I've brought this up, he got speared during the pre-match announcement when Jeremy Borash is like, "I'm in this corner." Lashley speared him out of the ring. And then EC3 lost the mat. Like, if there's ever a moment where you're like, yo, this guy needs to get his comeuppance because he just got embarrassed, it's that. He should have won at the end of the night. And he lost. And
oh, man.
The next night they could not get him back on track after that.
Man.
And then they try to turn him back heel to recapture that magic, dude. They killed it. He had to win the title that night.
What made me feel that same way in just a different, completely different situation? When they did the thing with Mark Henry with the fake retirement with John Cena, where he came out in the salmon jacket.
Yeah.
And then they had a match at Money in the Bank, and Mark Henry still lost. Yo, I was hot over that shit. I was hot. And it was, and then just like you said, then John Cena dropped the belt to Daniel Bryan the next month. I was like, bro, what the fuck? Yo, like,
you know which one I was hot about was when Jack Swagger came back as a heel? Because he was the world champion, right? And then it was just like, well, they're never going to get the belt back on him. And then he comes back repackaged with Zeb Coulter.
Oh.
And what was a good heel at first, man. And they put him up against
Rio,
you know, Alberto El Patron, who was bland as shit as a babyface champion. And it was the perfect opportunity to get him back in the main event picture. Lost. And after that, couldn't do
That was actually a very interesting time. I think, like, sometimes when it comes to WWE, we're getting off of the TNA Impact history, but, like, WWE sometimes they fumble the opportunity when it comes to mainstream press. And I think, like, that one had some elements to it, you know, like the Glenn Beck element and all that stuff that was getting a little, it was like crossing over into, like, potential, like, you know, like in the 80s, like, you always have the wrestlers who would, like, call out the local radio jock, and, you know, like, he'd be like trash talking, and it'd be somewhere where, you know, you're not sure if he's all the way in on this, but the wrestler's like, hey, he should be in on it, but if he's not, he's just a radio jock, so whatever. You know what I mean? I felt like that situation had some elements of, like, okay, well, he's talking nasty to us. And then I'm sure they kind of approached him and was like, hey, let's do some business. And he's like, I'm not working with you stupid wrestling people. So yeah, that one got funny. But yes, I think they definitely missed a good opportunity with the Jack Swagger, Zeb Coulter thing. All right, back to our list of Impact and why we loved Impact for the history that we've been watching it. All right. Who was your? Oh wait, no. I said, what was the thing that made you stick around? And you said EC3. For me, the thing that made me stick around was all the different stuff that I was seeing. I liked the six-sided ring. I liked the two entrance tunnels that were coming up, where the bad guys come from one side, good guys come from the other side. Like, I liked that. They would do different stuff. They had, like, Curry Man and Shark Boy, and, like, they weren't afraid to be really silly, you know, at times. And then, you know, a lot of stuff I liked, like, you know, like Sting and Kurt Angle. Like, there was a lot to like when I first started watching Impact in, like, 08, 09. So, there was a lot to keep me around. Okay. Who was your favorite act when you started watching? Now, this is, you already said EC3, but if you had to expand beyond EC3, who was your favorite act when you started? Because we know it was EC3, so EC3 has that place. But since you already used EC3, give me another act that really was your favorite when you started watching.
So I said EC3. I also got a caveat to that when I was off and on watching, you know, I was a big Taryn Terrell fan. Hello. So she's one of the only reasons I can actually stomach NWA at the moment. I liked Beer Money a lot. Now, when you talk about the Pop TV era, they didn't last too long because you know, Bobby Roode took off. I liked the Wolves very, very much. When Davey got hurt, I mean, I know that was, in a sense, the best thing for Eddie Edwards' career, but I missed watching the Wolves, and I missed that we never really got the Wolves back after that. So I liked the Wolves a lot. At the time that I started getting heavy in, the Knockouts division was on a big downward spiral. They had about three or four, I've mentioned this too, three or four girls in the division that actually didn't even wrestle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was like Allie, Rosemary, Raquel, and Maria Kanellis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was just like they were just in a bad spot back then. So I can't even say the Knockouts were a big part, but I was definitely into the Wolves a lot. The tag team wrestling in general, I kind of enjoyed. Gosh, I'm trying to think some of the other people. Those are the ones that stand out to me though. But
around that time, there was a really good tag team scene. I remember
the Hardys and Wolves and
I think it was the Dudleys. They did a Full Metal Mayhem match, and I was like, oh my God. I remember them. They did that match in New York, Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. It was either New York or I think it was Bethlehem.
Did they do multiple shows at Bethlehem?
Oh, they did a bunch. Okay. And I just remember watching that match and going, oh my God, I feel so bad these dudes are doing this to their bodies in front of no people. but it was some amazing work. It really was. So for me, I would say my favorite act when I started watching was probably The Beautiful People. Not for like the pure sex appeal of it. It was just, to me, The Beautiful People were a great example of like TNA trying stuff. Like when I first noticed the act, it was like when it was first coming together, it was just like, you know, Velvet Sky and Angelina Love. And they were, you know, just, they were cutting promos, but they were being like kind of suggestive about it. And then you could tell they were trying stuff and developing it. And it was fun. I enjoyed it. But there were so many things about Impact I enjoyed. They had Sting. Another one I really loved was Blueprint Matt Morgan. I was a big fan of Matt Morgan. I thought he was a guy that really had all the tools to be a big time player for Impact, just like kind of a hood ornament type of player. All right, so what was the first Impact pay-per-view you watched or ordered?
So as I've said a few times, I watch on and off. I didn't watch any of the early pay-per-views at all. Episodes here and there, yes. Pay-per-views, no. The first actual pay-per-view I got, though, was Slammiversary 2014. So this was the Destination America era. I remember they had Robbie E versus Jesse Goddard's on there. I think it was a King of the Mountain match. I want to say Jarrett won the King of the Mountain title in the main event. I could be wrong. I'm trying to think what else was on there. I don't remember the show like real, real well, to be honest with you. But that was the first one. I do remember though that I did enjoy it from top to bottom.
Okay,
I truly did. And I remember the match, the graphics for the pay-per-view, it was like gray. I'm trying to think who the hell else was on the card, but I enjoyed it quite a bit. And that's when I kind of knew, I was like, I'm going to start getting the pay-per-views at least, you know. This is before I even knew they were coming to Pop TV and that I'd be able to watch them. But that was the first one where I was like committed to it. I was like, I really need to start following this product.
Yeah. So for me, it was Bound for Glory 2009. I remember I ordered that because Matt Morgan was getting the title shot against Kurt Angle. And this is a time where, listen, your boy was not trying to come up off that 20, 30, 40 bucks for that pay-per-view every month. Okay, boy was not trying to spend that money. So I had to be invested to buy a pay-per-view. And I was looking forward to it. And, you know, unfortunately, Matt Morgan didn't win, as we all know. But they sold me on that pay-per-view. It looked like, you know, it was going to be his come-up. And I was excited for it, man. I was excited, but
didn't. You know who I thought was going to hook me in and didn't was Mr. Anderson. So Mr. Kennedy in WWE was far and away my favorite wrestler.
Oh, wow.
I was obsessed with this dude. I don't like how that sounds, but I I loved everything he did. I was like, he's gonna be a star.
Mm-hmm.
And then he got hurt, and then he came back. I remember, dude, he lost the Money in the Bank. I'm gonna go back to the WWE part because he was hurt, and he had this match with Edge that lasted like 10 seconds.
Yeah,
no, he got speared after the bell because Eric, dude, I was like almost crying, dude. I was so emotionally invested in that character. Like Edge jumped him on the way to the, they were both heels. Yeah. Edge jumped him on the way to the ring, beat the shit out of him, and then the bell rang and he speared him, made him look like a fool. So he got hurt, and then he came back, had a match, and then he got fired.
Yeah.
So I think it was a TNA, and I saw that the debut was really, really awesome moment.
Mm.
And I just didn't like him. I just didn't, man. Like, it wasn't the same for me.
No.
I'm sure there's a lot of people who are like, yo, his character was way better in TNA, but I just, it didn't hit me the same way. I was just like, I'm not. And then Kurt Angle is another who was my favorite during the Attitude Era.
Yeah.
And I mean, he, again, far and away, my favorite, goes to TNA, and I don't discount the matches he put on and everything, but it just, again, just wasn't the same, because I liked funny, I liked borderline funny Kurt Angle.
Okay.
That he had in WWE, and then when he came over TNA, he was so serious, man. I just I couldn't connect with him the same way.
See, I'm the exact opposite. Like I loved the stuff Kurt Angle did in TNA. Like I was like, man, like to me, Kurt Angle, like having Kurt Angle in a lot of ways really legitimized TNA in the eyes of a lot of fans, because he wasn't just there, you know, trying to, you know, just have a match and be out. You know what I mean? Just come in and get your title and be out. Like he wasn't like a lot of, you know, ex WWE guys who come in there and, you know, are just there kind of to collect a check. Like he was all in. He was putting in bangers. He was in with the character work, and you know, he wasn't doing the silly stuff, but for me, that was good. Like, again, I thought that set the tone for what the wrestling show was. You know what I mean? Like, this is Kurt Angle. He's, you know, he's all the superlatives in the world, and he's going to tear your head off if you get in the ring with him. You know what I mean? I'm like, okay, there you go.
And that is something I don't discount the matches and everything. That's just not what I'm saying. And I know that I talk about not wanting a lot of humor in wrestling, but I always appreciate people who are legitimately funny.
Yeah.
And I just miss that side to him. I miss that like kind of lighthearted side to him. But that's something that the current product needs, is that they need the next Kurt Angle and the next Gail Kim. Those people who come over and they don't choose AEW, they choose Impact. Yeah. Not I talked to AEW, they didn't sign me, so now I'm going to choose Impact. Like, no, they need those girls or guys, whatever, on those levels that come over one day and be like, yo, I want to be part of something different here. It's kind of like the like Joe Johnson in the NBA when he left Phoenix and he went to Atlanta, and Atlanta sucked. And people were like, what are you doing?
Right.
He's like, I want to be the man.
Yeah,
you know, and he made them very respectable for years. So I do think they need that. I think they need that guy that's going to come and say, "Yo, we're going to choose Impact over AEW. We're going to choose you know, the girl who's going to be Gail Kim." Yeah. Like, we still don't have that Gail Kim type of gal who just came over and like you know, Tessa Blanchard could have, but we're not going to talk about that right now.
Yeah, All right, so let's see. So we were on the pay-per-view. Okay, so how about this? What was one concept or gimmick that really caught your eye in your early days of Impact fandom?
So I think one of the things I always appreciated throughout the years, even when I wasn't an avid watcher, was just the ability to do things different. And people used to ride them a lot. Like, oh my God, all these gimmick matches, everything's a gimmick match. But then AEW does more gimmick matches than any wrestling company ever has.
Right.
And no one seems to care. So it was just one of those shots that TNA people would take. Granted, like today's product, I think they use the no DQ street fight shit like way too often, as you know, like Cornette would say, lazy booking.
Yep.
But there was a period, we talked about this on our last pod together, there was a period where they would just try different things, you know? They weren't afraid to say, how can we present the product different than what everyone sees on TV? And, you know, It's like they did the reverse battle royal, you know? I mean, yeah. I know that wasn't good. You know, they did this shit where I remember Tara was trying to get her tarantula back or something, and they had some – Jeremy Borash was doing some kind of game show type shit with them. I don't remember what it was.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, like, they would just not be afraid. Cycle? The feast of fire what? Stuff. What's that?
The spin cycle? Is that what
– No. That's not what I mean. It was actually on the show.
Oh. I think that was Feast of Fire when they would open the case.
Well, no, I was just saying, using Feast of Fire as an example. But there was – it was an episode, man, where Tara had her, like, tarantula, and she was trying to get it back. And, like, it was, like, two or three knockouts that they did something, and they were presented what was whatever was under the box or something like that. I sound like a fool right now trying to recall this. But
there was a lot of stuff like that, though. There was a lot of stuff like that. Where it's just like, but that I
when agree. Daphne had a sex, like do a lap dance or something, like striptease in the ring, she lost.
Right. It was so funny. She was like so begrudgingly, you know.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, this is the least sexy thing I've ever seen. But that was the point, right? You know what I mean?
Right.
But they were known for doing stuff like that all the time, right? Stuff just like, this is different. It's wacky, it's weird, but it's not like hokey, you know what I mean? And even if it was hokey, it's like, it's okay because we're trying to gain the market share. Like when I see WWE do things that are just bad, to me, I don't excuse that because you're the biggest, richest wrestling company. You got the best roster in the world, the best wrestlers in the world. You got a staff of writers, and the person who runs your company is, you know, the most effective promoter in the history of wrestling. You shouldn't put on bad TV, period. Sorry. It should not happen.
Yeah.
So, but I accept it more from, you know, companies who are figuring it out. All right.
But as far as my, I didn't actually give you an answer.
Oh, you didn't?
So the concept that I always thought was really cool, they did it on several one night onlys. I can't say it was ever good, but was the Joker's Wild. I thought the concept of having a random tag team partner was really cool. Now, WCW did this one point in the, I think it was the late 80s, the last time I remember them doing it. I think it was at Halloween Havoc or something like that. That was the first time I'd seen something like that. And I just thought it was a really awesome concept. But TNA didn't really pull the trigger on it. It was always like a very like one night only type of things. And One Night Only at one point was just a goofy show for the fans, but it never was tied into anything serious. You know, they did a Destination X where Braxton Sutter won he won the X and got a future title shot. Like he never even got the title shot because it was just one night onlys were like a joke, you know? Right. You know, they were wrestling for $100,000 briefcase and crap like that, you know? But, even though it's like, I think the Wolves team together like three in a row or something like that. Like there was some of it that was stupid. Like the execution of it was really bad. And the last one that they did do was a horrible show, but just the concept of it was something that I enjoyed. I enjoyed it enough to, you know, give a bad show my time. But, you know, but that stuff, you know, the lockdown stuff was cool. Lethal Lockdown, you know, they've definitely had some good gimmick matches over the years. You know, Feast of Fire will at least get you invested in it. They tried to do a knockoff Race for the Case one time, and that was in the history of me covering Impact the worst episode I've ever seen. There's not even a close second place. Maybe this episode we just watched, but yeah, just they did a lot of cool stuff, and we talked about it a couple weeks ago. It's missing from the product right now. Just taking that chance to do something different. They do stuff different in other ways, but I mean, from the wrestling standpoint, like we talked about that Revolver match they did for the X Division Championship. Like that was the best gimmick match they have done in forever.
Right.
You know,
we haven't seen it since.
No.
That's not good. All right. So for me, a concept or gimmick that really caught my eye was the Bound for Glory series. If you guys remember this, then like we're going back. 2008, 2009, you know, all the way up to 2013. And they would basically have a tournament over the summer leading up to Bound for Glory. And this was cool because this was a time when they were trying to like be on tour. So they would be going to like different, you know, towns or whatever. And you would get points for not only winning, but how you win. I think it was like 10 points for a pinfall, you know, like, I don't know, like 4 points for a disqualification, like 7 points for a submission, something like that. And the fans would have like these cards in the audience, and they would like hold them up. Like, you know, if you got the win, they'd hold up like a 10. And like, it was cool, man. It just gave the whole show like a running concept, a flow to it. And I liked it, man. It was fun. It made all the stories matter, right? I like long running plot lines. You know what I mean? So if you're like, okay, hey, we've got a tournament going from now until October, and that makes everything from now until October matter, right? Because the winner of this tournament is going to get the title match at the pay-per-view in October. Like, so again, it makes sense. I don't know why they've abandoned this series. I do know why they abandoned it. They abandoned it because it's basically a ripoff of the G1. but who cares? Like, wrestling companies copy each other all the time. Like, just do something fun. That's so Bound for Glory series, I was a big fan of that.
And then they watered it down quite a bit by the time, yes. Like the Destination America version of it was really bad.
Yes.
The fans didn't even know what they were watching. The ones in the arena, they didn't know they were actually watching the Bound for Glory series. No, you know what? I'm sorry. I'm thinking of the world title series they did.
Yes.
That was the one that was.
I was even mad that they called it that because I thought that was too close to the Bound for Glory series. And that was the time when, like, you know, Impact was just in a really bad place. Like, they were literally like taping to taping on if this is going to keep going or not, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's a rough place to be as a company. That's a rough place to be for talent, you know what I mean? Like, you know, that's when Dixie Carter was out here robbing Peter to pay nobody. She was robbing Peter to pay her Amex bill.
the Dixie Carter one of her big announcements was that the Knockouts were going to compete in the World Title Series.
Oh my God. Right. And so and this is the time when I was like, because of all the TNA drama, I was like, I couldn't turn away from the dirt sheets because they were like, you know, all the doom and gloom felt so real. It felt so accurate. You know what I mean? And it's like, you know, I heard these rumors that at this one set of tapings, they just taped a shit ton of matches because they don't know when they're coming back to produce TV again. And I was like, God damn, bro. Like, that was ugly, man. And don't get me started. It was a dark time. Dark time. Why am I still here? All right. So what was your favorite moment as an Impact fan? This can be anything. Just first thing that comes to mind when I say, what was your favorite moment in your history as an Impact fan?
So this is really easy for me. The Great War match at Bound for Glory 2017. I was there in the house. And it was by far, I always say this, NWA Empower was the most fun I've had at a pay-per-view overall. But this match was the most fun I ever had for like a singular match.
Yeah.
And granted, it was kind of like cinematic and stuff, but the being in the arena for it, and they were, you know, we're just watching on the big screen, and especially when they showed, you know, Hardy, there's two Hardys, Matt and Abyss fighting in front of the Universal Studio sign. I popped so big because in the early days of my podcast, I was like, why don't they ever wrestle outside in the park? And
it makes sense.
And then Vince Russo ended up saying the same thing at one point too. Right, I used to listen to him real heavy. He's like, I don't know why they don't leave the arena.
Right.
They could do really good television in the park. But I remember just yelling and standing and clapping and just laughing and just being so into it. Then, you know, obviously they brought it back into the arena, but it was just the most fun I ever had at a live event for one particular match. I was so happy to be here for it. And I've seen a lot of stuff live. Like I've seen The Undertaker live. I've seen Brock Lesnar many times live. I've seen some good sports moments live. But this was just like one of my just greatest memories as a fan in general, to something. I saw David Copperfield fly.
Wow.
Like this motherfucker said, I've wanted to fly my whole life. And this fool just started flying. And then he's like, just so you know, there's no strings. He, you know, encapsulates himself in glass and he's just flying in the glass, dude. So yeah, I know it's random as shit, but I've seen a man fly before. But yeah, this Great War stuff, man. I had a blast watching it, and I was recently thinking, man, I kind of missed the broken characters. There was a point where they start getting a little cheesy, but if you look at the early Matt Hardy when he was more of a darker character before he started trying to be funny.
Mm-hmm.
It was good at first. Remember, like when he debuted that character, people were like, this is the death of TNA. Like, this is how they're going down. But really, it's one of those things. In retrospect, you look back on, and you're like, this was some good shit.
Yeah,
I had a blast for that.
Yeah, yeah. For me, I would say my favorite moment as an Impact fan. It had to be going back to when Austin Aries won the world title from Bobby Roode. Not just when Austin Aries won the world title from Bobby Roode, but so he had this great build, right? So Bobby Roode was having this historically long title run, right? I think the longest title run in Impact history. And then you get Austin Aries, who just rises up through the X division. He's killing everybody. He's like, you know, unstoppable. Then he finally gets his shot at the world title and he wins. And then this is the moment that was great for me. On that first episode of Impact, Austin Aries goes out there and he cuts a promo where he, you know, basically says, holding this title makes me the best wrestler in the world. It makes me the number one guy in the business. And to me, that was the first time I'd ever heard anybody from Impact say that. And I just loved it. I loved it. I was like, yo, I'm enjoying this product. I like this product. I like this show. And I'm like, this dude is like, he's doing what everybody from Impact should be doing. Like saying like, no, this is the place to be. You know what I mean? And like, again, you're not going to magically be as big and rich as WWE, but like, you need to believe that this is the thing. Like, again, AEW fans believe that their product is better than WWE's. And that's the confidence that you should have, right? Like, at one point, WCW fans believed that their product was better than WWE's. And so, like, that just makes it fun for everybody involved, man. You know what I mean? Like, right now, like, you see Impact, you know, willingly plays, you know, a doormat to AEW at every chance they get, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so that moment with Austin Aries cutting that promo saying I'm the best because of this title, like, that was a great moment as a fan for me. It was fun. You had to be there. All right, and so we'll wrap it up with this. Who is an Impact all-time great that doesn't get the credit he or she deserves?
I would personally go with Bobby Lashley. So I know he had a couple earlier runs that didn't go really well, you know, didn't go very well for him. And then he became, you know, I don't know if they would call him a triple crown champion at the time, but he was holding all the belts at once. And he had just one of the most dominant world title runs where it was also legitimate. Like, it felt it didn't feel forced down our throats. It felt like, well, the roster really can't beat them. And some of the feuds he had, even his promo work, people always said, oh, his promos suck. Like, I thought he carried himself very, very well. And I thought it was a big loss for them. It was a loss that I didn't think they could replace. They, at the time, felt that, I know you're going to love this, at the time they felt that Brian Cage was going to be able to step into the Bobby Lashley spot, you know? Which I admire them at least thinking that, because, you know, I pointed out recently when W. Morrissey left, I said, who steps into his spot? They don't have anyone to even like try to put in his spot. You know, at least, TNA at the time was like, you know, back then was like, okay, we're losing Corgan, but here's our replacement. This is who we're going to, you know,
right,
who we're going to run with. That didn't totally pan out. But I think we don't look back at his time fondly enough. And with Impact social medias, where they like to let you know who used to be in the company, they don't post the Bobby Lashley stuff. They'll post it if he's wrestling Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania, you know, or something like that. They're, by the way, Bobby Lashley was in our company. That was still the best work of his career, you know, that title run that he had. And I was there when he lost to Eddie Edwards, and I remember jumping out of my seat. Like I could not believe the ref just counted three. You know, it wasn't the way a lot of fans at the time wanted Bobby to go down.
Right.
But I think the company wanted to do it in a surprise fashion rather than do it at a pay-per-view with a build where people knew he was going to lose type of thing. Yeah. So that's why EC3 didn't beat him. But yeah, I really don't think they look back fondly at that time enough.
Yeah. I think that's a great pick. Lashley had a phenomenal run. In my opinion, he's one of the best TNA champions of all time. And here's the thing, like, for me, you know, wrestling will never change from the aspect of, like, it's all about believability. It's all about believability. You know what I mean? That's why, like, you know, you seen that viral clip of Ricochet and Will Ospreay doing like 97 flips before they start their match. Yeah. And like, people are like, oh my God, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen. And I'm like, yo, man, like, but like, what? Where does that fit into a fight? So anyway, but I just think that, like, you know, Bobby Lashley, right? Like, he is a credible choice to play your world champion for any wrestling show, right? Like, period, hard stop. He's doing it right now in WWE. You know, like, people, I don't expect him to beat Roman Reigns, but nobody would really, nobody would be like, him? You know what I mean? If Bobby Lashley beat Roman Reigns, nobody could scratch their head but so much. You know what I'm saying? So, like, yeah, man, Bobby Lashley, he had great runs as champion. I was a big fan of Lashley's run as champion. And you're right, he does not get mentioned as an all-time Impact great, and he should, because he was. He 100% was. For me, somebody who's an all-time great that I think doesn't get the credit they deserve would be Christian Cage. And I'm going to say Christian Cage because when I first found Impact, TNA Impact, when I was flipping through the dial, seeing Christian Cage was one of the things that got me to stay. Just seeing this guy who was, you know, a small fish in WWE, but got to a smaller pond and had a chance to shine. I was like, yo, this is dope. When I first saw Impact, it was, you know, Christian with AJ and Tomko as his goons. And I was like, man, this is good. I was enjoying this. And I thought Christian did a great job in that. And just like he brought me over, he was one of the things that solidified me into staying, and he made the product look more legitimate by being on that show. I'm sure he brought a lot of fans over by being that too. They gave him a chance to be a world champion, and I thought he knocked it out of the park. And that's why I actually thought he was, you know, probably the next best thing to Kenny Omega to get that, for Josh Alexander to get that title back. So Christian Cage would be my vote for the, you know, for the all-time great that doesn't get the credit they deserve.
Yeah, and I caught some of his stuff as well over the years, and he was one of my favorite wrestlers. He's one of my favorite wrestlers now, always has been. So, yeah, they need a – that's another guy. Impact – or TNA needs – I mean, now they're Impact. Now I'm getting all confused. That's what Impact needs now. You know, I mentioned the Kurt Angle, the Gail Kim, someone who chooses Impact. They also need a guy like that who, you know, in the WWE, he didn't get that. He just didn't get that push. You know, he won the world title, and then I think he dropped it the next night, you know,
right,
to Randy Orton. It was just like, okay, we're going to give him the belt, but then he's going to lose it. They just never –
motherfucker.
Yeah, they never felt he was worthy, and that there's some guys on WWE now that are like, the company doesn't think that they're worthy,
yeah,
and they need a guy like that to be like, I'm gonna go here and be a top guy, someone right. That the fans, not like Angle, who was already top guy, but someone who the fans were like, we wanted this guy to be a top guy, the company didn't agree, So he's going to go to come to Impact and work that main event scene. The best example I can give current day is Cesaro.
Mm.
You know, like if he were to come over, you know that he would be elevated to the top. And people would probably tune in to see that because they wanted to see him at the top. He just never had that opportunity.
A Cesaro, you know, Josh Alexander match, somebody going to lose some teeth.
Yeah. And if he goes to AEW, which he probably will, he's not going to be the top guy there. It's just not going to happen.
Right.
He's gonna be in that like Jay Lethal era stage. Mm. You know what I mean? But a guy like that, if he came to Impact, I think that would be cool too.
Oof. All right, man. I think that's a fun little Slammiversary. Not preview, but like in honor of Slammiversary, BQ and TW's, you know, Impact 20, our big hits from our history as Impact fans. Again, like I said earlier, guys, let us know what you thought of our takes and our memories. And also feel free to add your own memories in the comments section below. We're going to get back to chatting at you guys in your comments soon. But if nothing else, we'll definitely reply to your comments in the comment section and we'll chat it up down there. BQ, let the people know where they can find you out here in these social media streets.
At BQ Speaks on Twitter. And then don't forget to check out at the Impact Lounge on Instagram. You can check it out on Twitter as well. And on Facebook.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And you can find me at TW Talking About on the pretty much any social media. You can also follow my podcast page at Talking About Pod. Bro, my pod has been dry. I've had a lot going on. Just so you guys know, my real life job, I've been very, very busy. We have a lot of very important sports properties that are in there. Playoff seasons right now, and so your boy has not had a minute to breathe, so I haven't put out a pod in a minute, but the pod is coming back long, strong, and down to get the friction on. So everybody go to the Talking About Pod page right now and hit that subscribe button for your boy and show me some love. But listen, like I asked you guys before, you know, make sure you like, comment, rate, and subscribe. But if you really want to help the show out, the best thing you could do is tell a friend to tell a friend. Let's bring more people into the conversation. For BQ, I'm TW. Peace.